Hello, and welcome to the American Humane Fireside Chat. My name is Lydia, and I will be your coordinator for today's event. Please note, this conference is being recorded, and for the duration of the call, your lines will be on listen only. However, you will have an opportunity to ask questions live on today's call. This can be done by pressing star 1 on your telephone keypad. You may register your question at any time. I will now hand you over to your host, Robin Ganzert, to begin today's conference. Thank you.
Hi, thank you so much. We're so grateful for everyone joining us today. Can you believe we have done 10 fireside chats together? Yes, 10 times where we've come together to celebrate our incredible efforts at American Humane to build a more humane world. Well, friends, sometimes it takes a crisis to pull people together and unite them for a common cause. Over the past 10 fireside chats for special friends of American Humane, we have found that unity and strengthened our ties to fellow animal lovers as we share news about the state of the world's animals during this global pandemic and how we've discussed and learned how we better protect and improve life for all animals living in every corner of the earth. Well, friends, today we've brought together not just our best friends and supporters, but some of the people who've been instrumental to helping us do our vital work, those who are out there in the field and making a difference to animals during the COVID-19 crisis, and a heroic pair dedicated to protecting our country and those who have protected us. Friends, first of all, I want to introduce to you on the call, we have my wonderful colleague Jack Hubbard, who's our Chief Operating Officer. He has been helping with our rescue team lead the Feed the Hungry program, and I know he's going to bring you a very special guest to talk about the incredible impact that your generosity and your donations have made for Feed the Hungry. So, Jack, welcome to the call, and thanks for all you've done to help build a humane world.
Well, thank you, Rob.
I can't wait to hear your interview with one of our Feed the Hungry recipients. And friends, I also have an incredibly and just one of the most inspirational people you'll ever meet in animal rescue. Janet Swanson is a philanthropist, an animal rescue volunteer, and one of the very special group of national ambassadors for American Humane. Janet, welcome to our 10th Fireside Chat.
Thank you, Robin.
Thank you for being here. You know, Janet, we know that the pandemic has been hard not only on people, but on animals across the country. That may be especially true for the Swanson family, which at one point, I believe, consists of you, your wonderful husband, John, 2 dogs, 6 cats, a bunny, and a couple of parrots. Am I right? What a great family you have.
Yeah, that sounds right. I sometimes have to stop and count myself. But, yeah, I think you covered everybody.
I love your family. That's wonderful. How are you all holding up during this pandemic time?
Oh, we're all fine. It's not terribly different from normal times. Of course, our schedules have been cut back, but everything that we do with the animals, we just still keep on doing. And they don't seem to mind at all.
They're probably seeing you and John a lot more than they used to. Am I right?
They also might be a little tired of us, but I think you may be right. Yes, since our outside activities have been curtailed and any travel that we normally would have done, we haven't done. So, they're kind of live versions of that cartoon about, no, I don't want to go out and walk again. You've already walked me a dozen times today. That type of thing.
I do love that cartoon, and we've shared that a lot around American Humane. And I'm looking at Daisy and Mr. Darcy now, and they're like, well, don't you have a place you'd rather go than to sit here and be with us again?
Right.
So I think that's really is the cartoon. And of course, actually, I'm joking. They're laying right beside me and they're like, well, we're going to nap right now while you do your fireside chat. So that's fun too. They're getting their nap in. Yeah. Janet, you know, I've known Janet for a number. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say I've got a group around me napping as well. So I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yes, and with the heat of this afternoon, I think we all might enjoy a nap. But Janet, I wanted to talk with you a little bit and share with our listeners of our Fireside Chat about your work in rescue. You've been one of our dedicated American Humane Rescue volunteers for a number of years, and I know you've been on the front lines of saving, sheltering, and caring for animals caught in disasters and in cruelty cases. We're getting ready to enter the season of storms in a huge way, one of the worst storm seasons predicted on record coming up, and especially challenging to rescue in times of natural disasters when we're in the middle of a global public health crisis. Janet, I know you've deployed with our rescue team, and I'd love to have you share with us a little bit about your experiences about being an animal rescuer.
Well, my first experience was back in 2013 after the tornado that went through Oklahoma. And I had actually never seen the devastation of a tornado before. I mean, I've seen it, you know, on TV, on the news, but I'd never actually seen it up close and personal. And the first day I arrived there, I went through part of the area that had been affected by the tornado, and it's like something out of a disaster movie. I mean, it's just incredible. And it was also amazing to see signs that people put up on their homes that were in the spirit of renewal and survival. And then when I got to the shelter where we had the animals, that's just such an amazing thing to see. These animals who I'm sure they appreciate where they are. They know what they've been through and they know that they're safe. And they're just wonderful to work with. And then of course there's the people that I met and that I was working with who just has such a deep concern. I remember at the end of that deployment, we had a big adoption event, and we all had different jobs during that event. And I remember talking to one of the people whose job it was to take potential adopters and their dog out into an enclosed area so that they could play with the dog and just make sure that the people were right for the dog and the dog was right for the people. And at the end, he was telling me how it felt to stand at the door, the exit door. People were going out, and this was after they'd been approved for adoption. They had the dog. They had all the supplies because we had a humongous area of supplies. So they had all the supplies that they would need, and they are now heading out, going to their car with their new family member. And he said it was like these people had not come to adopt a dog or a cat. It was like they'd had this animal. I mean, it was like that this animal had been a part of their family forever. It wasn't like, oh my gosh, we have somebody new. No, it was like, you know, we're here with our dog and we're visiting and now we're going home. And yet that wasn't the case. This was a totally new adoption. But he said It just, everybody who went out, it was like they've had this animal forever. And it was just great. It was amazing.
I love that.
And yeah, and I was in Houston after Harvey, that hurricane, and we had people coming into the shelter who were looking for their animal. And in some cases, I remember there was one case where the dog had been missing, not because of the storm, but because the dog had been frightened by something, and this woman's elderly parents had the dog, and the dog had been frightened by something and just got away from them. But we would have people coming through, including the daughter of this couple I just mentioned, this elderly couple, and finding their dog or their cat. And when that happened, everybody took out their cell phones and videoing the reunion, and everybody's hugging everybody, and everybody's crying because we're all so happy because they found each other. I mean, it's amazing. It's just an amazing experience. It really is. It really is.
Telling me these stories just gives me chills and goosebumps, and these are the kind of stories that just warm my heart so much. And I think about what our volunteers do every day to allow us to impact so many communities in such crisis. And one crisis I remember was the devastating floods in West Virginia in 2016. And I believe that you had one of those special moments coming from West Virginia's floods. Can you share with us a little of your memories about that experience?
Yes. We had set up two areas of assistance, and in one of them, not the one where I was working, but the other one, this woman, local woman, had these three kittens, and they were about a week old, and she'd been caring for them, and she had seen the mother washed away in the flood, and the kittens, I think they were floating on something, and she was able to get to them and to save them. And so she had taken them, she had quite a number of animals, and some of our people went to her place to give her assistance in a variety of things. And they saw these three kittens. And they convinced her that she really had so much on her plate with all these other animals that would she be willing to give them the three kittens? And she agreed that, because she was taking care of all kinds of animals that she'd rescued. And so they brought the three kittens back to our trailer, and two boys and a girl. And the responder who was really taking charge of them at that time had them in her hotel room at night, fed them every couple of hours around the clock. And then a week later, we were all leaving. And so she was unable to find shelters that would take the three kittens because they were so young. I mean, they needed special care. And so she convinced a couple of us to get involved. And I kept saying, no, I'm not going to because I've got cats at home. And then, of course, you make the fatal mistake of actually looking at them. You know, you can't look at them. It's all good to be having this conversation when they're nowhere, they're not in the same room, you know.
But once
you look at them, you're basically dead meat. So I took the little girl, and I we still weren't leaving yet. I mean, this was a few days before we were leaving. So we're still working, and we were working in our own trailer, plus we were working in the Charleston Humane Society, helping them because they were taking animals. And so I made a quick call to my husband, and I said, you got to make a slight change in my flight home, because I was flying in and out of Pittsburgh. And I said, you know, you've got to tell them that I now have, we'll have an animal on board. And so, interestingly enough, my husband wasn't all that surprised, which kind of surprised me.
I love that. No, I bet John was not surprised. He expected you to come home with a little beauty. Please share with us the name of this great new companion of yours, because I love the name.
Well, her name is Hava, H-A-V-A, and I named her that because Ahava is a Hebrew word for love, so I just kind of shortened it a little bit. Because I fell in love with her as soon as I saw her, and so I found PetSmart. And by the way, finding PetSmart in Charleston wasn't that easy for me. Apparently, it was on the totally opposite side of town from where I was, so I was driving, and I didn't know Charleston, West Virginia, very well. And, I mean, I didn't know where I was going to wind up, but I finally found a PetSmart where I could get supplies and a carrier. And when I got her up to the Pittsburgh airport and I checked in, of course, everybody wanted to know, you know, about the animal that I had. And I said, it's a kitten. And I said, you have a kitten. So there at the check-in desk, I had her out. All the counter agents were coming over to see her. There were some crew members who were standing there, and they came over to see her. And then when I was at the gate waiting to board the plane, of course I had to feed her because I was feeding her every few hours. And so I took her out to feed her. Well, when I had her out, I was feeding her. Now, we've all been in around airline gates while we've been waiting to board, and, you know, everybody's always talking. You could have heard a pin drop. Not one person was making a sound while I was feeding her.
They were just so happy to see that precious little
I mean, it was just amazing. Everybody was looking at her. And there was this father traveling with his son. And his son came over and asked about her. And I started educating him about kittens. I mean, this was terrific.
Oh, I love that. You know, that's really the power of these animals in our lives. And if they can stop everyone from doing anything in an airport, that is just amazing. Janet, I have to go into something.
There was one other thing I wanted to tell you if we have time. When I was flying back in Oklahoma after the tornado, when I was in the airport waiting for my plane flying back, I was wearing an American Humane shirt. And everybody, I mean, people everywhere came up to me and thanked me for being there. And they were so glad that American Humane had come in. I mean, these are total strangers. And they just saw the shirt. And I'm telling you, when I stopped off to buy a snack for the plane, the woman there was talking to me about it. And she said, how did the adoption event go? I wanted to get there, but I couldn't get off work. And when I was sitting by the gate, everybody around me said, did you come to help the animals? And I said, yes, that's what we do. And, oh, my God, these people, they were so grateful. I mean, who knows if these people even had animals? But they were so grateful to have us there. It was incredible.
Oh, Janet, you just bring tears to my eyes with this story. It's wonderful. And that's the kind of stories that I know we're going to be reliving in the months ahead because of the predictions with the storm seasons, the fires that are predicted in the West Coast in particular, the tornadoes in the season of storms, and hurricanes. We're just really predicted to have a devastating, and I hope we don't. I hope we don't have any of these natural disasters.
No, I hope so too.
But, you know, but boy, if we do, we know American Humane's going to be there. I want to talk about Rosebud in a minute because you and I share a special bond to a very special city. But before we get to my beautiful Rosebud, Janet, I wanted to just, again, thank you. And I hope you don't mind that I bring this up. You and John are just amazing in terms of your philanthropy, and you've made an extraordinary commitment to support American Humane in form of legacy gifts. Can you tell me why you have chosen American Humane in your plans? And again, on behalf of all of us and the animals we will serve in the years to come, we thank you. But please share with our listeners why. Why?
Well, mainly because over the years I've learned what American Humane does. I mean, I've learned through my own experience and through meeting people and talking to people at different events. As you know, I've gone to a number of the events from doing what I've been doing. As I say, my own experience. So, you know, I know what you do. And it's kind of funny because ever since I got involved, when I'm at a movie or when I'm thinking of going to a movie, I have to see that seal. You know, if there's an animal in that movie, I have to see that seal. I have to know that either the script was reviewed or someone was right there. In fact, I did have the experience of being on a set with one of your reps a number of years ago when there was a movie being filmed in Florida. So mm-hmm. I even got firsthand experience seeing what was done there. Basically, I know what you do.
That's wonderful.
And it's necessary. It's so terribly important. So that's why.
Thank you. Thank you. And we believe it's terribly important to continue this kind of work in the years, the months to come, the years to come. American Humane is our country's oldest national humane organization. And, you know, I think we're needed now more than ever as we continue to build a more humane world. Well, a quick update on someone very special, Rosebud. Rosebud, yeah. And I came together because of you, Janet. Do you want to share the quick story of Rosebud, how she entered our lives?
Yes, Rosebud was found here where I live. And through a couple of different phone calls, someone got to me. And so I went over to see her, and I was willing to adopt her at the time because we had, not long before, we had lost one of our cats, so I was willing to take her in. Unfortunately, the two cats I had at the time, they were very sweet to Rosebud. I mean, they accepted her because I've always had multiple cats, so it was not a big deal. Mm-hmm. They accepted her. Rosebud didn't want anything to do with them. She
yeah.
And I watched these altercations. You know, they either not bother her at all, or you know, they try to lick her, and she would just walk up to them and hiss at them. She was not happy, and yet I knew she was a people cat because she would always want to be on my lap, always want to be with me, always want to curl up next to me or on my lap. So I knew she was a people cat. And I have a hard time rehoming unless I am absolutely dead sure. I've only rehomed two animals in my entire pet-owning life. And I couldn't think of anyone in my immediate area, and then you happened to visit, and Rosebud, of course, took to you because you're a people. And so I was watching you interact with her, and I thought, And so I remember saying, would you like to have her? And your jaw dropped. the rest is history.
So, the rest is history. And yeah. Rosebud and our family, we celebrate Catter Day every day. We love Rosebud. She is a people kitty, and we've had her. She really took to my oldest daughter, who's now in Atlanta, and my daughter would never think of a day without Rose. And so Rose and Aiden both came to my home during the pandemic. Of course, we're still in the pandemic, but she recently had to go back to Atlanta, and Rose went with her. I said, I will keep Rose during the pandemic. And she said, no, Rose never came to my side. So Rose and Aiden are best friends, and they live this incredible life. And Rose, Rose also gets along with our family dog. So she gets along dogs. She just didn't want to have any other cat competition around. So you've got to love that about Rose. But I will never be able to thank you enough, Janet, for bringing Rosebud into our lives. And I hope that serves to inspire others. We're in Adopt a Cat Month, and I hope that all of you will join us in adopting a cat. Both Janet and I are big believers in cats. More than one is great, except when it's Rosebud. She can be the only cat around. She's the cat diva. But we hope that you'll open up your heart and home this month and Adopt a Cat Month and bring home two. Isn't that right, Janet?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I've got six.
Yes. Yes.
And I wasn't planning on six either, but should I tell you the story of the three additional ones? Did I tell you that story?
No. Tell us quickly. We're about out of time before we get to our next segment. Tell us quickly. We'd love to know.
Okay. Well, I work Wednesday mornings, or I was, in the office of our synagogue. And last June, we found three kittens at the shed outside our synagogue. And at the time, the Humane Society, in their facility and in their foster system, had 150 cats and kittens and 50 dogs. As I said, this was June, kitten season. And so I was not going to add to that number. So I said, well, I guess I've got six cats now. They were 8 weeks old at the time. They just weighed, they were healthy. They weighed just not quite enough to be neutered, but eventually I got them up to the proper weight, and actually they were about 5 pounds, I think, when they were neutered. And yesterday they went for their first annual checkup, and they are 14 pounds, 16 pounds, and 16 pounds. They're cute.
I love it. I love their big kitties. I love it. I love it. I love it. Oh, Janet. Well, I have to tell you, thank you for making our Adopt a Cat Month that much more special. We've got great cat stories this year now. And thank you truly for your generosity and all you do as a rescue volunteer, and certainly putting American Humane in your legacy planning. And friends, if you've been inspired by what Janet said, she said she's giving because it's really important work that's being done here. I hope that you'll feel inspired, too, to consider us in your estate plans. And if you're interested, you can call one of the most amazing women, Planned Giving Officer Kay Kilcullion. Kay can be reached at our 1-800 number, 800-227-4645, or through email at kq@americanhumane.org. And she will help make a legacy gift happen. And your legacy, my friends, can be about compassion, caring, hope, and love, our incredible shared values at American Humane. Janet, you're an inspiration. I love you bunches. Rose sends a big cat paw to you, and thank you for bringing her into my life, too. And thanks for being one of our incredible rescue volunteers. You're just amazing.
Oh, you're welcome. You're welcome. You're welcome.
Please stay on the line if you'll stay with us. We might have a question for you at the end of our call today.
Yes, I'll stay.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, friends, I also want to give a big shout out to our governing board of directors for their support of our rescue program over the years. They have been the force behind so much of our incredible work in communities like Moore, Oklahoma,
all the places that we've gone in Tennessee, the fires we've covered in California, the hurricanes all throughout the Southeast, and then, of course, importantly, through Louisiana. And I'm going to turn it over to my colleague, Jack Hubbard, our Chief Operating Officer of the American Humane, to welcome our next guest. And as he does so, I want to just again do a special thanks to our Feed the Hungry national spokesperson, Jean Shafiroff. Jean, you heard from our last fireside chat, has just championed this incredible Feed the Hungry program, which, my friends, is so critical and so crucial right now as we are on the front lines helping shelters and rescues across our great country feed animals who are also suffering in this pandemic crisis. Jean, thank you for your national leadership on this cause. Thanks to our National Governing Board of Directors for their leadership in Rescue and Feed the Hungry. And now over to you, Jack, for what you're going to share with our friends and our listeners regarding Feed the Hungry and our work. Jack, over to you.
Oh, thank you so much, Robin. And again, I just want to reiterate a special thanks to Janet, who's a very special woman who has done so much for our rescue program and countless animals, and her humility and care for animals just comes through on the line. So, Janet, thank you so much for all you do. So, transitioning our call to a related area, we're going to be talking about our Feed the Hungry program, and I'm really excited to have the opportunity to welcome a special guest, Jillian Sergio. Jillian is the executive director of the Companion Animal Alliance in Baton Rouge. Jillian, thanks for joining us. Welcome to the Fireside Chat.
Thank you for having me.
Of course, of course. Can you tell us a little bit about what the Companion Animal Alliance does and what sort of challenges you're facing during these, you know, very difficult times of COVID and the pandemic?
Of course. So, Companion Animal Alliance, we are the open intake community animal shelter for East Baton Rouge Parish. We take in about 8,000 animals each year, and that includes dogs, cats, livestock, and some exotic animals and snakes and all that fun reptiles that we get. In our time since operating the shelter, we increased the save rate of animals from 20% to over 77%, and that number is actually increasing every day, so we're so excited about that. You know, COVID-19, it's been challenging for everybody, but Louisiana was impacted significantly by this virus. And obviously, I know we all are used to disaster planning, but this is something we couldn't plan for, something we didn't know was going to happen, and we couldn't plan for it. So that was definitely daunting. I want to give... I think it's really powerful. I found it last week. But according to the Center for Planning Excellence, before the COVID-19 crisis, 25% of Louisiana residents lived in an area considered vulnerable to economic stress. As of today, nearly 80% do. So our community was just impacted significantly financially, through their work, through their families. Child care has been limited. And also we did have a very high rate of the virus. So one of the main challenges are people in their families, and included in their families are their pets. And during this time, when people are having to make hard decisions on what they're going to do, if they're going to need to feed their family or their work, they shouldn't have to worry about their pets. During times of stress, I mean, we all know that there's really nothing better than coming home to your dog or your cat or your parrot or whatever that may be, and then the love that they can provide. And so we wanted to keep as many families together as possible and take out that burden of people having to wonder how they're going to feed their pet or supply for their pet. So that's really been the main thing, and obviously y'all helped us out with that tremendously, and we've made some significant strides in our parish regarding that. The second challenge, at least for our shelter, is staffing. We need to keep our employees safe, because we, even though we got over I think we had all but almost 290 animals in foster care during the stay-at-home order that was issued in Louisiana. But animals still were arriving every day. And we have to have staff to take care of them. We need our veterinary staff. We need our caretakers. We need our staff trying to reunite lost pets with loved ones. But how do you keep them safe at a time when we still have to take care of our animals? And especially now when we're kind of, you know, getting up to capacity and getting, you know, dozens of animals every single day, it's hard to limit the amount of people in our building staffing-wise because we have to take care of these animals. That is our responsibility. That is our job. That is why we're in this field. So it's challenging and scary, and we're doing everything we can and preparing and trying to be as safe as we can be. But having that many people in the building and, you know, working so closely together as you do in animal care, it's challenging and it's scary, and it's something we're having to learn as we go, which, you know, if you like to prepare for things, is kind of difficult, but we're doing the best we can.
We're also working through deploying to natural disasters in the midst of the, you know, pandemic, training service dogs for veterans, being on movie sets to ensure the animals are treated properly. The nature of what we do every day is certainly made more difficult by these restrictions and the dangers, and we're all doing everything we can to work through it. One thing I did want to ask you about is at the start of the pandemic, there was a big push for folks to adopt and foster. And American Humane, alongside many of our partners, really led the charge on that front. And we were thrilled to see news stories of shelters in New York City and other places cleared out of people stepping up, adopting, and fostering. But throughout all of that, we've been reiterating to everybody that just because one shelter in New York City or several may be empty and all the animals adopted, there's a lot of other shelters out there, many in the South, that are still under an enormous amount of pressure that have more and more animals being surrendered because of the economic challenges, you know, that families are facing. And they also have an inability at times, especially in the earlier phases of this, to allow people to come in and visit with the animals due to some, you know, government restrictions and safety restrictions, and also an inability to raise money with events. Is that something you're seeing in your community?
Yes. So luckily, when everybody put the call out for fosters, our community stepped up tremendously, and we can't thank them enough. We got about 80% of our animals in the shelter went into foster care because we had a stay-at-home order for about a month and a half. And so we were able to really take care of the most vulnerable animals here, which was fantastic. Our community, actually, we had people lined up outside the door, and they waited for hours to pick up a foster. So we are so grateful and thankful for our community. But since we've opened, you know, people that found animals and were holding on to them, or that needed to surrender their pet for whatever reason, our intake department has been full every single day. And then also, as we talked about earlier, it is kitten season. So we're seeing quite a few kittens come in. So we are getting fuller. And, you know, we had some time where we had this luxury of having, you know, empty kennels, and we can have less staff in the building, and we had foster care. And while we still, I believe I pulled the numbers earlier, we have about 250 animals in foster care right now, but we're still getting animals in every day, and especially our neonatal kittens and animals that need some additional help. So it's been challenging because we still are limiting people in our building for adoptions. We can allow, right now, we can allow two people per hour, which usually in the summers our adoption teams, especially on weekends, we have 25 people coming in at once just to adopt. So it's been a challenge to really help them find homes. We do have sort of a virtual adoption process as well, but you know, and I'm sure we all agree, I think a lot of people just want to meet the pets that they're adopting. They want to see if they have that connection, and that's been a challenge. We're trying to drive more people to virtual, but a lot of people still want to, you know, hug them and have their kids meet them and kind of get to know them a little bit better. So we're adjusting, and While we do transports as well, transports are kind of impacted right now. So certain states have limitations, and everybody really needs a little help. So it's been a little complicated, especially as, you know, we're a southern state and our intake is overwhelming, especially in the summertime.
Well, Jillian, I just want to personally, on behalf of all of American Humane, all of our donors, our board, our ambassadors, to thank you for all the work you're doing to help those animals in your care. And as you mentioned, American Humane, with the support of our generous donors who have supported our Feed the Hungry campaign, made a donation to your organization, the Companion Animal Alliance in Baton Rouge, to support that work. We wish you the best of luck. We're so proud to know you and all the work that you do. And please, please, please take care of those puppies and kittens. They need you now more than ever. And know that American Humane is going to be there to help you in the future. And you know, we stand by our partnership, and we want to make sure that you take care of all these animals and do right by them. So thank you so much for everything you do.
No, thank y'all for all of your support.
Well, Jillian, I'm going to quickly transition to give our audience, and I hope you'll stay on the line, because there may be some questions at the end here. But I wanted to give some other updates on other areas. But before I do, I did want to encourage anybody who would like to support our Feed the Hungry campaign. You can visit AmericanHumane.org, and you can literally save a life. You can fill a belly. You can help a shelter in need. You can help a shelter dog or cat who is in desperate need of help right now. This campaign, which started just several weeks ago, has already provided meals to 400,000 animals. 400,000 meals have been provided, and we have a goal. And our goal is to provide 1 million meals. So we're just about halfway there, and we can only do that with the generous support of so many people on this call who have already stepped up, and others who will be listening to this podcast online at a later date. So again, if you'd like to support the Feed the Hungry program, please visit AmericanHumane.org. There's a lot of other unsung heroes in addition to all of the people like Janet, who rescue animals in natural disasters, to Jillian, who's taking care of all of these animals in shelters that are in need of forever homes. There's another incredible group of people that deserve recognition. And these are our veterinarians and our veterinary nurses who work day in and day out to keep our pets, our farm animals, and even our wild and endangered animals alive and healthy. In fact, these are the people, when you go to a veterinary office, you drop off your four-legged friend, family member to these folks to ensure that they receive the medical care, the healing, the love that they need to get better. And if you think about it, what they do is nothing short of miraculous in caring for these animals. And we entrust them with our family members' lives. And to shine a bright light on these true heroes, we honor the nation's top vets and vet nurses each year at the American Humane Hero Vet Awards, which is sponsored by Zoetis. And this is a program that's been up and running for several years, and it's only been made possible by Zoetis, which is an amazing company with a terrific philanthropic program that is so committed to the animals that they serve, as well as the professionals in the veterinary community that care for them. So this year, we received more than 250 nominations from across the country. And after a review by a blue ribbon judging panel of veterinary professionals and animal care experts, we selected 10 of the country's top veterinarians and veterinary nurses as finalists. And I'd like to read to you just one of our finalist stories. Dr. Mike Adkison has dedicated his veterinary career to the conservation of wildlife and nature, and he passionately believes modern zoos and aquariums play a pivotal role in inspiring people to protect vanishing species around the globe. As Vice President of Clinical Medicine at the Chicago Zoological Society, Dr. Adkison works tirelessly to ensure that the thousands of animals under his care are healthy, happy, and thriving. whether that means a CAT scan on a rhinoceros or a knee surgery for a gorilla, Dr. Atkinson focuses on how to make it all happen. And for the past decade, Dr. Atkinson has led marine conservation programs in Peru that focus on protecting wild Humboldt penguins, fur seals, and sea lions. And through his work in the field as a wildlife veterinarian, he helps ensure the health of endangered species and shares his expertise with other veterinarians and marine biologists. And he's just one example of the many people all around our country and all around the globe who are protecting our animal friends and keeping the world's wonderful legacy of life alive. So for all of our listeners and everyone in our audience, I strongly encourage you to go and read the stories of the 10 hero vets and vet nurses at www.herovetawards.org. That's herovetawards.org. And vote online for your favorite in each category every single day between now and August 13th. And the winner is going to be debuted on American Humane's 10th anniversary of our Hero Dog Awards this fall, which is going to air on the Hallmark Channel during prime time. So please get your votes in, and let's honor these incredible people who care for our pets, our friends, and our animals all around the globe. So in closing, I'd like to first thank Janet and Jillian for visiting with us and sharing their stories and their love of animals. Together, all of us are making a big difference during this pandemic. We've been fighting false rumors about the virus, pushing for adoption and fostering, and fighting to feed those who have been left behind or abandoned. And I know that we can win each of these battles if we continue to work together, and I hope each of you can help us spread the word about the work we're doing. Our campaigns, our newsletters, and our new reports are all available on our website. And you can help us recruit new support and awareness to our cause, which is more important than ever. And lastly, I have some very, very exciting good news to share. I am thrilled to announce that American Humane has received our third 4-star rating from Charity Navigator. This is the most important seal of approval that a nonprofit organization can earn. 4 out of 4 stars from Charity Navigator. Only a fraction of the 1.5 million charities in the United States have done this, and we are so very proud of this recognition. And it's a powerful sign of what you have all helped make possible, and it also showcases our commitment to all of you who are donors and supporters, that we remain committed to the responsible stewardship of your support to make sure that funds actually get spent on programs and that we make a difference in the lives of the people and the animals that need it most. So thank you all again for taking the time to listen. I'd now like to open the session up for any questions that anyone may have.
If you would like to ask a question live on today's call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad and ensure that you are unmuted locally so I may collect your name to announce you on your turn. Again, please press star 1 now if you would like to ask a question. We have a caller that's come through. Please stand by while I collect their details.
Great. Thank you. And again, as our operator collects that information, I can't emphasize enough to everybody who's listening to take the time to follow us on social media. Our Facebook page is fabulous, and we have regular updates multiple a day, which can update you on all the activities that we have across all of our diverse programs, ranging from service dogs to our rescue program, our Hollywood program on movie sets, protecting animals, to protecting wildlife and promoting conservation all around the world.
All right, so everyone, thank you so much for your patience. Our first question comes from Jean Sheffroff. Jean, when you're ready, please go ahead.
Yes, hi everyone, and I just wanted to get on. I am the national spokesperson for Feeding America, and Janet, I want to thank you and Gillian, for both of you, for what you shared with all of us. I think your experiences are absolutely incredible and so important and really make all of us understand even better the important work of the American Humane and the Feeding America program. And it is a great honor to be involved with this charity and to see the work all of you are doing. And thank you very much, and I hope that you'll all support the Feeding America program as a human being and someone involved with many different charities. I can say that the American Humane is an extraordinary charity. Just the fact that their overhead is less than 90% of the money brought in, and that really about 91% of their money goes to programs, that in itself says worlds about the work of this charity that you are all involved. So thank you very much for sharing your experiences. And Robin, thank you for all the great work you do, and it is a great honor to be involved. Thank you.
Jean, this is Robin. Thank you so much. Yes, thank you, Jean. We're so honored to have you as our leader and our spokesperson for our program. Thank you. Jack, back to you.
Well, I think that just about concludes our session. I just want to thank everybody for tuning in, and I'll tell you my takeaway from today's Fireside Chat. We've had three and I guess four incredible leaders of our humane movement who are all helping animals in different ways. We've had Dr. Robin Ganzert, our CEO, who leads the organization and, you know, has accomplished so much good in her tenure while overseeing this organization. We've had Janet, boots on the ground, Janet, out there rescuing animals, adopting, and making a significant and really moving financial commitment to the organization so the work can continue. Jillian, the work you're doing on the ground, and Jean, you know, your leadership of the Feed the Hungry program and what you're doing to inspire and encourage others. And I just challenge everyone listening, hear the stories of these four incredible people and what they're doing and what they've dedicated their life to do, and ask yourself how you can help, because we need all the help we can get. So with that, I'd like to thank everybody, and we look forward to our next Fireside Chat in a couple weeks. So thank you, everyone.
Thank you for joining
today's
call.
You're very welcome.
You may now disconnect your lines. Hosts, please stay connected.